Welcome back to the QR Code. BIN News anchors Morgan Wood and Bree Wood are here with us discussing this week's major stories. All right. Although there are some Black leaders who use their platforms to suggest otherwise, our next story serves as a stark reminder to everyone that racism is alive and well in America, and unfortunately, many Black children are encountering racism at a very young age. Bree, let's go back to you to start this story, and then Morgan and Q, we'll get your thoughts next.
Ramses, this one kind of broke my heart. A Black 7-year-old girl, her Mardi Gras celebration took kind of a crazy turn when she caught a Black dhow from a crew of tux float with beads tied around its neck. Now, that imagery, historically, we know is linked to racist violence, like hangings and things of that nature. So her mother, a woman who goes by the name of Shayna Lee, says that the moment forced her to explain racism to her daughter during what should have been a joyful day. So, you know, a lot of people have been in New Orleans for Mardi Gras celebrations. It's an annual thing. But the fact that this crew of tux float felt comfortable enough to have such racist dolls on display on their float, and then for the innocence of a child to just be destroyed because she picks it up thinking it's a regular Barbie or something fun, and her mother has to ruin the day by explaining to her that that was nothing fun or representative of her. So the incident did spark some immediate outrage across New Orleans, even from the mayor, Helena Moreno. She condemned the display as deeply offensive, unacceptable, and having no place in our city. She also stressed that Mardi Gras should represent joy, unity, and diversity and inclusion, and not the perpetuation of hateful imagery. Moreno did contact the crew of Tux leadership to ensure that those who were responsible for that are identified, and she plans to hold them accountable. We have Council President J.P. Morrell that also commented. He described the doll as a disturbing effigy meant to harm and intimidate families and children. Also, State Representative Alonzo Knox, who is also Black, said residents reached out with justified disgust to his office, and he confirmed that he is working with Attorney General Liz Merle and the Governor of Louisiana State Police and to investigate and ensure that everybody who had anything to do with this is held accountable. So on one hand, I can understand why the mother felt she had to immediately tell her daughter why she could not be keeping that doll. But to watch the video of her speaking to their local news crew about how she was devastated, especially during Black History Month, to have to tell her daughter that things like this are still happening today in 2026, and that this, unfortunately, is a doll that is not representative of you, and it's hate in real time. So it's a lesson for the daughter. Unfortunately, it's an important lesson that most of us have to learn. A lot of us maybe have experienced racism at a young age as Black people living in America. If you have not, you're very fortunate. But I do understand why the mother was torn, but I am glad that the leaders in New Orleans are taking this seriously and working to make sure that nothing ever happens like this again. Because when you go out to have a good time, especially during Mardi Gras, you're not interested or looking forward to dealing with, you know, any type of racism, especially in a city as Black as New Orleans. Mm.
Morgan.
Yeah, as Bree mentioned, the mother in this story, I mean, the whole story is very much heartbreaking, but the mother, one thing that she said that just struck me was she said that this incident took away her daughter's innocence. That, you know, in that conversation of explaining racism, she feels like her child lost her innocence. And as Bree also mentioned, Louisiana Attorney General Liz Merle said that described this incident as, or the display as, quote, a disgusting, vulgar, racist image, and of course vowed to help identify those people responsible. It is nice to know that the leadership is like, we're not about to do this. So the crew of Tux did issue a statement acknowledging the offense and saying that they're also launching an investigation condemning the racist gestures and confirming that the riders involved have been permanently removed from the organization. In an attempt to make amends, the city invited the family to watch other Mardi Gras events from the Gallier Hall though the family still chose to leave the festivities early. Now, of course, this incident sparked some broader conversations around race, public celebrations, accountability, raising questions about traditions and the cultural sensitivity at community events like Mardi Gras. But Mardi Gras in New Orleans has a long, complex racial history. So for decades, what I found out in my research is that many of those crews with a K, K-R-E-W, WES crews were white only historically, excluding black residents from parades and balls, which led to the creation of separate black carnival traditions. Like you may see the Indians and one thing that comes to mind, one group that comes to mind, I always hear New Orleans natives talk about is the Zulu Nation or Zulu Social Aid and Pleasure Club, and how, you know, they have they birthed their own traditions because the crews were traditionally racist. So groups like Zulu, they create their Mardi Gras Indians, created their own powerful traditions, blending the celebration of Mardi Gras and the resistance and community pride with essentially making sure that, hey, if y'all don't want us over here, we're going to go ahead and create our own thing. Like you said earlier, Q, we're going to make our own box, our own beads, our own costumes. And that's essentially what has happened. Now, some historical Mardi Gras imagery, of course, includes what is considered blackface and racial caricatures. You know, some of that is rooted in what some natives call pride, while others are like, I don't know about that, you know, from the outside looking in. But because of this, you know, the imagery that resembles lynching, which is essentially what that doll looked like. She had gold beads wrapped around her neck and just hanging, is a symbolism of racial tropes. And we, again, just like the whole monkey, primate, ape thing, you cannot have a black doll, black anything, hanging from anything. Beads, New Orleans beads or Mardi Gras beads, it doesn't make it any better. It's going to incite the racial trope. It is essentially that racial trope. And you know, that comes with historically, it's just weighted so heavy historically. It doesn't matter if it's a joke. It doesn't matter that it was a lighthearted event in the sense of celebrating and it being a parade, because immediately it's almost like, really? Which essentially is what the mom said. Really? This is what we doing? So it is very heartbreaking. I myself am a mother. I have a daughter. You know, she's 5 years old. I can't imagine the day where I will have to talk to her about racism to this extent. I'm sure they are exposed to an extent from the work that I do, but I just, you know, I would hate for that day to come. I do recall one day getting on an elevator with my son. I was in a hotel in, I would say, rural South. It was almost like this old couple got on and they were like, "You're not supposed to be here." And I was like, "Oh, yes, we are." And I knew exactly what was happening. But what I was trying to do in that moment was protect my son, because he's just speaking to people like, "Hi, how are you?" And they looking at him, mugging him up and down. "You're not supposed to be here." "Oh, yeah, we are. Excuse me. We're going to floor number, blah, blah, blah." Like, but I knew exactly what was happening on that elevator ride. So I just, my heart goes out to this family. And but I also, to an extent, want to tip my hat to the leadership of New Orleans, because it's nice to see that, you know, you shut these types of things down immediately. You go into investigative mode. You basically want to protect the positivity of Mardi Gras. And I think that's a beautiful thing there.
Q?
You know, an interesting thing happened when MAGA Republicans, MAGA Americans became prominent. Politeness wore off, as did shame. So we started getting more outward, overt racist behavior from racist people who once upon a time would have been shamed and required to, at least in public, act polite at the risk of losing their job, losing political status, or being shamed or frowned upon by their neighbors, colleagues, and coworkers. What I noticed when that happened, and we talked about it on the show before, is that a lot of us who are mostly impacted by racism were applauding that. Finally, they've taken their mask off. Now we know who they are. And I think that was driven mostly by like a sense of validation, like, hey, we've been telling you guys forever that all this racism exists and you've been treating us like we were crazy. You've been gaslighting us. So see, we were right. But I always pushed back against that because I honestly do not care how those people act in private in their homes. I care how the world that my children have to walk around in feels to my children. And when they were being fake polite and fake nice and fake not racist, perception was reality. So my children walked around in a safer, less tolerant of racism, less uncomfortable country. And you talk about removing the innocence from children. Ramses, you probably remember the day I came into the studio after having to go to the school because my son was called a stupid effing N-word by one of his six-year-old classmates. Yeah. Innocence gone. Because now I have to explain to him what that means. And then the school wanted to expel the other six-year-old child. And I asked them if I could have a conversation with the six-year-old child's parents. Because six-year-olds, I don't think, are capable of actually feeling that sort of hatred. I think they're just parroting and performing what they hear and see from their parents.
Exactly.
So, you know, the new norm is not something that I'm okay with. I appreciated a country where racists had to be racist in private because it was viewed as disgusting, because it was viewed as immoral, and because you would be shamed and fired and kind of pressed to the edges of your social circles if you behave that way out loud. This new America, that's not the case. And, you know, we always talk about that FAFO thing. The problem is that we all have to find out, not just the bad actors. And this story and stories like this break my heart because there's no putting that toothpaste back in the tube. That young lady has to now start to prepare herself with armor and weaponry for defense of a world like this at far too young of an age. She should be a carefree child, not preparing herself in that way for a cruel world. And we have to decide as parents, how much preparing do we want to do? How much protecting do we want to do? And do we make sure that our children are not going out into this world unarmed socially for the cruelty that waits for them?
You know, this story is a weird one. I saw this a few days ago when it happened. I didn't realize that Chris would delineate it from the stack and we'd end up talking about it like this. But when I first saw it, the people that were talking about it were pushing back saying, well, no, we tied all the Barbies in this way that we threw off this float. So there's white Barbies, there's black Barbies. That's how we, you know, beads go around your neck. This is just kind of how it looked. And we got white and black Barbies because of the population. We want, you know, whatever. This is kind of the position I remember them taking. And I realized that as a black person, I can see things. I'm sensitive to things that other people might not be sensitive to. And indeed, I may see things and connect dots that there's no intentionality behind it. I famously told a story, walked into my studio one day at an old radio station. Someone had left a banana on my mixing console and I flipped. I absolutely flipped. I was livid. And it turns out that the morning show guy just left his breakfast in the studio and he took his motorcycle that day. You know, whatever, that was his story. And I knew that guy. That guy was fine. So it wasn't, it looked to me like something that it wasn't. And of course it was harmless. So I realized that I'm gonna speak for myself, but I think that by extension, a lot of people who have kind of been exposed to so much trauma that we got either genetically or in our own lifetimes, will see things sometimes that aren't there. And us seeing a black Barbie doll with beads tied around her neck, that might trigger that. Okay. So I realize that all of this is a possibility, and I try to take that discernment into these stories that we cover on the show. Now, I don't want to make mountains out of molehills, but this one, the reason I didn't push back on the story, this one, they were throwing these dolls off of a float called Crack Pipe. It says it on the side of the float, huge letters, big as a person. Crack Pipe. So, maybe there's some intentionality there by some folks. The rest of the people on the float aren't making the connection, so they're participating not knowing. Maybe it's all a big conspiracy and everyone's involved, or maybe it's just racially insensitive. Either way, these people need to do better, especially in a place where, again, that trauma runs deep. You don't want to exacerbate people's trauma, not if you're a decent person. There's certain jokes that I would not tell because they're in bad taste. And there's some people that just, they'll laugh because they're trying to be polite, but it hurts them. And I know that because I've experienced it, and I know that because I've actually offended people in my life. And I realize that's not the person I want to be. And so I had to learn what these other people's traumas were, all the people that I've interacted in my life. I had to learn what their traumas were so that I could be sensitive to those traumas and respect them. I have no problem becoming a more decent man. I have no problem teaching my son how to become a more decent man and evolving with the world. So I don't feel like that's weakness. I don't feel like there's anything wrong with that. And I think that there's been an entitlement that has been associated with white people for such a long time that a lot of times these blind spots sneak up on them because they aren't active in trying to identify where the blind spots are. And at best, that's probably what this story is. All right, let's move on. Our next story centers around Black Mayor Karen Bass, the 2020 LA Olympics, and the latest release of documents connected to the Epstein files. Morgan, for this story, let's go back to you. And then Bree, we'll get your thoughts next. Then Q, finally, we'll hear from you.
Yes. So, you know, the Epstein files continues to be a thing. And whether or not your name is in it, watch out, because that will probably take on a life of its own. And that's no different in this story. So newly released U.S. Department of Justice documents include decades old email exchanges from the chairman of the Los Angeles Organizing Committee for the 2028 Olympic and Paralympic Games. Now, Casey Wasserman and Ghislaine Maxwell, the convicted associate or girlfriend, ex-girlfriend, whatever you want to call her, of Jeffrey Epstein. So the emails are from 2003 and were described as flirtatious and have sparked public scrutiny. Now, Wasserman says he deeply regrets the correspondence and that it occurred before Epstein and Maxwell were known as criminals, or their crimes were known. So the revelations have led to growing calls from some local officials, including LA Mayor Karen Bass, as you mentioned, for Wasserman to step down as chair of the LA 28 Olympic Organizing Committee, arguing the controversy is a distraction from preparing for the 2028 Olympic and Paralympic Games. Wasserman has not been accused of any criminal wrongdoing. So I want to be clear with that. But despite the pressure, the LA 28 Executive Board conducted an independent review and concluded that Wasserman's relationship with Epstein and Maxwell did not extend beyond what was already known, pretty much those emails. And they publicly backed him the Executive Board, let me be clear, publicly backed Wasserman to remain in his position leading the 2028 Games. Now, as this fallout continues and goes on, Wasserman announced that he will sell his sports marketing and talent agency, saying his appearance in the Epstein files has become a distraction for that business, not so much the 28 Games, but his sports and marketing agency. And some high profile clients have already departed because of it. So the controversy continues to grow beyond local politics, with petitions from activist groups urging his removal and public debate over whether the leadership of the LA 28 Games should change ahead of the global spotlight. Now, some critics, this is a mixed bag here. Some critics warn that continued focus on the controversy could distract from planning and fundraising efforts for the 2028 Games, while supporters argue that Wasserman's leadership and sponsorship relationships remain key to creating a successful event. So it's one of those things where this person is high profile. We may need them. Some people are saying we may not. From what I take away from LA Mayor Karen Bass, which I like, she's probably like, listen, Trump been on my back all year. I don't need any more reasons why Trump is going to just, you know, I don't know, bring her up, loop her in. It's funny because, you know, his names are in the files too, but it's always a diversion and always a reason, you know, why he never talks about himself and everybody else. But I'm not going to get too much into that.
Bree.
Well, you know, it's funny. I talked about it in entertainment. Another aspect of this, Whoopi Goldberg found her name in the files. Mm. And then she all of a sudden was on The View, finding herself having to explain why her name was in there as part of an email. Well, she made it very innocent and said that she was asking about a private jet, or someone was asking on her behalf and named her because she was trying to get to a charity event in Italy. And we know Epstein had access to private jets. He declined to give her one. So she said, well, that was the end of that. So it's like it could either be that small, and we don't know what, you know, most people's, you know, dealings are. We saw, who was it? Ciara's husband, Russell Wilson. He was in the Epstein files. Again, that was an email regarding a plane. So it's like people could say, you know, it was harmless and it was this, but, you know, it's like, where, who, how do we pick and choose who we hold a standard to? Basically, Mayor Bass, she says, again, piggybacking off of Morgan, that this whole situation is a distraction. And I think she's more so concerned with the optics and how it looks for L.A. She says it harms L.A.'s global image. And she told CNN that she believes Wasserman should step down regardless of whether or not the board wants to keep him, because the whole controversy is a distraction from the preparations for the 2028 games, and it reflects poorly on the city on a world stage. So she believes that the LA 28 board made the wrong decision by keeping him, because she can't fire him. So that is completely out of her hands. It's up to them. But she has taken no time openly criticizing the board and their vote to retain him, and she just called it unfortunate. So there is political pressure. Multiple local leaders, including LA City Council members and county supervisors, have also urged his resignation, and they say anyone linked to Epstein or Maxwell in any capacity cannot credibly represent the city of LA. So questions about Wasserman's transparency and his past associations report notes concerns that Wasserman failed to fully disclose his earlier interactions with Epstein and Maxwell. He probably felt like he didn't need to, because in his mind, that's nothing. But it led to some arguing that he has become a credibility problem. Mm. So, I mean, really, it's a matter of opinion. And so it appears that as of right now, as Morgan stated, he's not stepping down due to that. But I don't know, a reputational threat maybe. And they're just worried about how it will make the city look, that people can constantly bring up that his name is in the Epstein files. So, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's that. But it seems that, you know, that there's a button on that. He's not stepping down right now, and he doesn't have to.
Okay. All right. Well, it is time for Q's Corner, our new weekly segment, where Q War shares a final headline story. So, Q, take it away.
Thank you, Ramses. That last topic makes you, it really makes you pause, because there's so much there.
Yeah.
But whether it's Cardi B pushing back against ICE online during her concerts, or Nicki Minaj now openly supporting Trump at public events, many of today's top artists have become quite comfortable sharing their political opinions on various entertainment platforms. However, during a recent interview, rap artist Too Short offered a different opinion on this topic and stated that other rap artists should, quote, keep your politics off the microphone. As we close out this week, here's my thoughts on whether rap artists should mix their music with their political views. I'll start us off. Bree Morgan and Ramses, you guys can close us out. We had a conversation recently, Ramses, about Michael Jordan and how famously, when so much of the country wanted the most famous black man on earth, sans Michael Jackson maybe, to be more outspoken and show more solidarity with his people. He was once a quote that was attributed to him. I've never heard him say the words, but I think it was, Republicans buy sneakers too. And that's kind of the nexus of Too Short's position. Too Short comes from a community much like the ones we come from, Oakland, California, just like Compton, just like Detroit. And to get out of those circumstances, the ladder that we all saw was money. And allowing black people to participate in capitalism has been a very interesting thing. So let's talk about the kind of uncomfortable part. Some black celebrities, especially in hip hop, seem to prioritize wealth and capitalism over, you know, the collective solidarity. And it's kind of a historic incentive. We've been sold a version of empowerment through capitalism. You know, build wealth inside of this system, because there's nothing that we can do to change it, right? And that's not a grassroots liberation position. That's something that came up when structural change was kind of saw or seen as too disruptive and, like I said, impossible. So instead of dismantling the inequality that we faced and tearing capitalism down, we figured out we just have to participate. So I think that in most cases, hip hop artists decide not to choose solidarity over wealth because some of us see the only way out of poverty and the only way that we can actually make some changes to fully participate. I don't think the capitalism has any morals. I don't think it has any virtue, but we're in this game and some of us feel like we have to play. Morgan?
Yeah, so historically, hip hop has always met the intersection with politics, whether it's through protest, music, economic advocacy, or, you know, candidate endorsements, which we recently saw in last year's, or I guess now 2 years ago, presidential election. So the real debate isn't whether rappers are political. It's kind of like, or for me anyways, it's like how openly and how strategically they engage. So overall, we saw Public Enemy be one of the most politically outspoken groups in rap history, of course, addressing systemic racism and government power since the late 1980s. Tupac Shakur is no different. He spoke about Black liberation, inequality, government distrust in his interviews and his music. Jay-Z has worked on criminal justice reform initiatives and supported Democratic candidates publicly. And then there's also Killer Mike, Common, Chance the Rapper, T.I., and as we previously mentioned, Cardi B. On the other side of the aisle, you see your Waka Flocka Flames, you see your Nicki Minaj's, sometimes 50 Cent, too. He's publicly commented on tax policy during the 2020 election, initially signaling support for Donald Trump before walking that back later. Ice Cube has said he's worked on his contract with Black America Plan and met with Trump campaign officials in 2020, saying he was willing to talk to any party about the policy. And of course, we have heard we have all heard from Kanye West. I mean, whether it's this side or that side, you know, Kanye tends to have a bit of a he definitely has an opinion. But one that has recently stuck out to me, of course, as we're talking about Too Short, is Uncle Luke. Miami rap pioneer Uncle Luke. I mean, because here's the spectrum. You go from, you know, the type of music, explicit music that Uncle Luke will put out, or the type of music, explicit music that a Too Short will put out, and then wonder, well, how can we take these people serious? But the truth of the matter is, if you're dealing with those types of situations, for example, I believe Uncle Luke, well, let me give his real name, Born Luther Campbell. He had to deal with, at one point, the courts saying that his music was too explicit. And I believe the explicit, what is that you call the label, is kind of a result from his case. Like, hey, your music is explicit. Now it needs to have this label on it. So that's my stance on that.
Okay. All right. Well, we appreciate you as always. I'd like to thank you again very much for your time and your insight. Once again, today's guests are BIN News anchors Morgan Wood and Bree Wood. And that's going to do it for us here at the QR Code. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson. If you have some thoughts you'd like to share, use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. While you're there, be sure to hit subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I'm your host, Ramses Ja, on all social media.
And I am Q Ward on all social media as well.
And we'll be hosting another episode of Civic Cypher this weekend on a station near you. For stations, showtimes, and podcast info, check civiccypher.com. And join us Monday as we share our news with our voice from our perspective right here on the QR Code.